it's the end of time. And the Mississippi River, she's a gold grind. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, a woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Boy, sometimes I just want to listen to Hank Jr. and not even talk about this stuff.
Because you can't stop us out and you can't make us run. Those wooden moan boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.
Well, will we?
Country folks can survive.
Will we survive? I don't know, folks. You know, it's to see the response of this whole gender-neutral bathroom edict from the Obama administration is concerning. It's disconcerting, I should say. It's troubling to see the lack of outrage. Now, that doesn't mean you and the listening audience are not outraged. You are just like I am. But where is the GOP? Where is this great, conservative political organization? Where is the outrage in the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate? I have not heard of any legislative agenda to defeat the Obama edict. Have you? I just got a Facebook message from a listener who described to me that his 13-year-old daughter told him that in her middle school, they have a what's called a fluid gender individual that prefers to be referred to as higher. And you're right. You can't make this stuff up, as he says. This is real time, folks. This is actually happening. This little 13-year-old girl has a guy in the school who calls himself fluid gender, and the school apparently is going to respect his fluidity. Where is the outrage if we don't think that this edict and the other baloney coming out of Washington, D.C., the bipartisan, corrupt, morally bankrupt national masquerading as a federal government in D.C., if we don't think that this is targeted at the Christian community, at those people who embrace transcendent moral truths, well, you're just not, you don't understand what's going on here. You know, I live here in Oklahoma, supposedly the most conservative state in the union. And joining me on the phone line here is my good friend, Representative Dan Fisher, who is a House member here in the Oklahoma legislature. He represents District 60. And he's going to tell you a story about the most conservative state in the union, the reddest of red states in the union, and what happened yesterday in the Oklahoma House as he led the fight, as he led the charge to try to persuade our superintendents in this state to not comply with the Obama edict. Welcome to the program here, Representative Fisher. I'm glad you joined us here.
Hey, Mark. It's good to be with you. You can just call me Dan.
Okay, Dan. I appreciate that. Well, listen, Dan, take us through yesterday. We know, as I told the audience in the beginning of the week, you were leading the charge on this here in the reddest state in the union, and that the state of Oklahoma was going to try to address the Obama edict that came out a couple of Fridays ago that requires gender-neutral bathrooms. Take us through the day yesterday, or actually the days leading up to yesterday, and explain to the listening audience what happened.
Sure. Well, first of all, we should be the reddest state in the country, but we ought to be red with embarrassment. Our faces
wow.
should be red.
Good point.
Or red with anger, one or the other.
Yep. So,
okay. Well, let me tell you what happened. 2 weeks ago on May the 13th, I wake up on a Friday morning and discover you visited with me about basically an edict that the Obama administration had issued the night before. And so I immediately got to work on it and started talking with everybody from our lieutenant governor to our attorney general. And sure enough, that's exactly what had happened. So I started, I don't know if you call it rallying colleagues, but we started dialoguing back and forth. And, you know, I was insisting that we had to do something, that we couldn't sit by and just let this happen. So
right.
Had ongoing conversations with our state AG, and of course, he was very proactive. He had already started compiling a letter that was fired off to the Department of Justice and the Department of Education. Of course, we're talking about the U.S. Department of Justice and Education that Friday afternoon. Pretty tough letter. And then the very next week, he worded a much longer letter that enumerated all the ways in which the Obama administration has just completely overreached their authority. And, of course, I know your audience is very aware of the limited powers that our founders granted to the federal government, and that long ago they exceeded those by far. And, of course, now there's some type of monarchy or oligarchy or something far removed from anything that would resemble a republic. So anyway, of course, at the legislature, I had a group of legislators to get together with the attorney general last week, and he's going to fight this at the federal level. And I, you know, certainly give him credit for that. And I think he's already starting to pull together other like-minded states. And I would assume, Mark, that there's going to be a lawsuit probably by the end of this week.
Right.
Because, of course, the Obama administration has not budged. Okay, so now let's go to the Oklahoma legislative level. Even though our attorney general is fighting this at the federal level, mm-hmm. Our legislature needed to do something because there have already been, at least I'm told, school districts across Oklahoma that had started to, on their own, comply with the whole
wow.
transgender nonsense. And then, of course, with this decree from the Obama administration, that just added fuel to their fire, because I guess they were already inclined to be thinking this way. Not all districts, but a number.
Right.
So we felt like something needed to happen legislatively.
Okay. Well, Dan, let me stop you there real quick and interject.
Sure.
I want to ask you a question, because I know you're a big believer that the states have the sovereign authority to address these types of issues. And that was kind of the tack you were beginning to formulate in your mind, right? That the states did have the authority to do something at this point.
Well, certainly we do. We've had the authority to do something about all of this stuff for decades. Mm-hmm. You know, as you know, the Congress has the authority to strip jurisdiction from the Supreme Court, so they
yep.
should have stripped jurisdiction from them long ago on the abortion issue, and certainly recently on the marriage definition issue.
Yep.
But the states were sovereign all along. We're kind of like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. The problem is, we don't know that we have the power, or at least
yeah.
we don't think we do, and so we don't do anything. Go ahead, Mark.
So when you introduced this idea of the states standing up on this particular edict to your colleagues up there, what kind of reception did you receive from them?
Yeah, well, you know, most of them were in agreement with me. Of course, I wanted to do what North Carolina has done and just simply say, no way, no how. And just simply say, no, we're not
yeah.
going to do this. We did seek some advice from a very well-known constitutional attorney who has fought a number of issues, and he was inclined to give us the counsel to take a little softer approach, which kind of already went against my time.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of the group, you know, was torn back and forth. And so we decided to use the religious objection route. And so we put together a bill that would basically require schools that made any special accommodation for any group of students, of course, this would be the transgender students, that if those who had deeply held religious beliefs were placed into a place of conflict where their own beliefs were being conflicted, let's say that a junior high girl or a high school girl was in the girl's shower after PE or after basketball practice, and a boy comes strolling into the shower claiming he's a girl that day, which
yeah.
I think that you and I, when we were 16 or 17, if we'd have figured out we could have gotten away with it like that, we would have too. I would have stood outside the locker room and waited for all the cheerleaders to go in, and then I'd have declared to the entire school, I'm a female, and I'd have gone in right after them.
So, we are men.
Yeah, I mean, you know, come on. So if their deeply held religious convictions were conflicted and abused, then the school would have to offer equal accommodations for religious objection. And of course, the council was, you know, religious freedom, religious expression is certainly ensconced in our founding documents, the Declaration and the Constitution with the First Amendment.
Yeah.
And our legal advice, by the way, from outside of Oklahoma, said that they thought that they could fight that battle better. So against my better judgment, I said, okay, I'm going to go with the group. So that's what we did. And mm-hmm. and we crafted, I think, a very good bill that should have at least started the ball rolling in our favor. And it should have told schools, hey, we better back off of this because we're fixing to really get into a hornet's nest here where we're going to have to grant equal accommodation to students that have the religious objection. So that's where we were going with this when the bill was heard yesterday.
All right. So then talk us through the disappointing conclusion of yesterday. So you drafted the bill, you submitted it. And it ended up in a committee. Talk us through what happened there.
Yeah, okay. Well, what ended up happening is the Obama administration, these people are dummies. See, that's one of the things that I think we conservatives and Christians forget. Our enemy or our opponents, whatever words you want to use, are not dummies. They're very, very smart. They're very sly. Mm-hmm. So Obama waits until the time when most states are closing out their legislative sessions where they're not going to have enough time to respond to this.
Mm-hmm.
So he issues this thing 2 weeks ago. Well, our session is over this Friday in Oklahoma, this year's session of legislature, unless we call a special session. So what we had to do is the pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House had to author this bill. It couldn't just be one of us legislators because it's too late in the game to introduce legislation according to our rules. So that's what happened. The Speaker mm-hmm. and the pro tem of the Senate, Speaker of the House, authored the bill. Well, then 2 days ago, I was called into the Speaker's office and asked if I would be willing to author the bill. Well, it's not uncommon for legislators to run some of the Speaker's bills or some of the pro tem's bills over in the Senate. So I said, well, sure. Well, what I didn't know is that the Speaker was going to remove his name from the bill, which, again, I don't mind my name being on it. But all of a sudden, it looks like the Speaker is running from it. And even though the bill could still be heard, now it's no longer the pro tem of the Senate and the Speaker's bill. It's the pro tem of the Senate and Representative Dan Fisher's bill.
Right.
Well, that's a slightly different, you know, scenario. But anyway, we fight through the deal. We still get the bill heard yesterday. It had to be heard in the Appropriations Committee, as odd as that sounds, because we're at that stage in the legislative session, and that's why it was critical that the Speaker be one of the authors. Well, anyway, he pulls away from it. So I presented in committee yesterday. We had an hour of Q&A. Most of the questions, oddly enough, came from the Republicans. Now, this committee has about 30 members, but yesterday afternoon, by the time I started presenting, it was 6 o'clock in the evening. So the committee is down to 20 members, but there are 14 Republicans and 6 Democrats in the committee. So we have more than enough votes.
Right.
So I take Q&A for an hour on this bill. Most of the questions were not hostile, But, you know, all these questions that they all should have known the answers to, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, once we finally take the vote, voila, it ends up in a tie, 10 to 10. Four of the Republicans voted no, sided with the Democrats, and the Speaker apparently was nowhere to be found to come in and break the tie. So because the vote was 10 to 10, the bill fails.
My word. Well, tell us, you know, so as you're standing there with your jaw on the floor, especially knowing you've got a supermajority in the committee at that point, what was the rationale? And I don't know how comfortable you feel naming names, because there are a number of people that listen from the state of Oklahoma to my radio show here. I don't know if you're comfortable naming names, but if you want to, feel free to name the names of the four who didn't support your measure. And what was their rationale?
Sure. Well, first of all, they can go online. They can go to okhouse.gov and go to the media section and pull up the actual recording. I don't know that they could get video, but they could get the audio of the entire interrogation that I went through with the bill and hear every bit of it. But it was the chairman of the committee, Earl Sears. Now, I will give him credit. He fought so that the bill would be heard, because the Democrats immediately started objecting to even hearing the bill, and we had to take a 30-minute recess for them to work all of that out, and he fought for the bill.
And so
to his credit, the bill was heard. It wouldn't have even been heard had it not been for his standing up for it. But he voted against it. Representative Dennis Casey voted against it. Representative Leslie Osborne voted against it, and Representative Harold Wright. Two of those districts are just right out here by mine, so these are friends and colleagues, and they're from my area. So four Republicans crossed over. A number of the Republicans didn't stay. They left. I don't know that they walked the vote. I wouldn't accuse them of that, but they were gone if they had been there, because the vast number of committee members who were gone and whittled the committee down to 20 were all Republicans. Most of the Democrats stayed. Of course, they apparently believe in what they're fighting for. So anyway, their rationale, though, Mark, was just very simple. They were concerned about their school superintendents and administrators who had told them they didn't want this bill. And one of them even asked me, one of the representatives said, Representative Fisher, do you not understand that some of these administrators don't want this? And I said, well, I appreciate that, and they have every right to think that. But, you know, we're here at this Capitol, not just to represent superintendents and administrators.
Right.
We're here to represent the rest of the people of Oklahoma that I'm hearing from that want something done, and they want something done now. I mean, Mark, think about this. This is ludicrous. Even if didn't have a Christian mindset, to allow boys to claim that they're a girl and go into the high school showers where the girls take showers. But, you know, this thing is beyond bathrooms. The Obama directive actually addresses accommodations like in dormitories and overnight field trips. So you take a high school field trip somewhere where you're going to be staying overnight, and you have girls' rooms together in the motel and boys. One of those boys could take advantage of that, claim he's a girl, and insist that he room with a girl.
Yeah.
And if they put him in a private room, he could then sue for discrimination because they isolated.
Yep.
I mean, this is just total ludicrousy. Forget about the biblical perspective, which, of course, is my primary perspective, but just on a logical basis, this is ridiculous. So how could any representative be conflicted about this? Like I say, even if you set aside the biblical principles, the Judeo-Christian view of male and female, as the Bible says God made us, and modesty and morality and all those things, and just think about the logic of this.
I know, Dan, this is my perspective here on the radio show, that I think Christianity is in the bullseye. The Judeo-Christian morality is in the bullseye of these federal overlords in Washington, D.C. I think there's an attempt to marginalize us, to shame us into compliance, to embarrass us, to make us look like we're old fogies. But you and I are you and I are the same age, actually.
Yeah.
Dan, can you believe we're talking about this today. I mean, could you have imagined when you were, you know, in high school or entering college that someday in the future you would be on the House floor arguing to try to prevent guys from going in the girls' bathrooms?
No, in 1981, when I graduated from Arkansas Tech University with a degree in secondary education with my field in mathematics, and then proceeded to teach public school for 3 years before I was full-time in the ministry, if you'd have told me that I was going to be here in just this few of years, I'd have laughed at you and said, you're nuts.
Yep.
But here we are. But, Mark, let me tell you, you and I have talked many, many times. We worked together on a lot of things, and you know, I was on your program not that long ago. I lay the blame for this squarely on Christians and conservatives. It's not the Democrats. They didn't have enough votes yesterday to stop this. It was the Republicans, or at least Republicans in name only. Mm-hmm. And the church, and particularly preachers and the pulpit, have just gone silent. But they've gone silent because they're cowards.
Yeah.
And we have got to wake these people up or replace them. And this grassroots that we believe is out there better come alive and begin to speak out, or they're not going to be grassroots. They're going to be beneath the grass, because this movement is not going to be satisfied with just being able to do their thing. This whole transgender deal is really, in the end, not about transgenders. They are trying to force an ideology on us. Yeah. You know, they represent less than 0.1%. And yet the entire rest of the 99.9 or 99.7% or whatever the number actually is are being asked to completely alter their views and their lifestyle to accommodate this 0.1 to 0.3 of 1%.
Yep. No, Dan, you're right. I mean, I talked about this yesterday on my show, that we no longer are interested in protecting minority rights. Minority rights are ruling the people. And we're
seeing this evident
right here. Hey, listen, we've only got a couple of minutes left. Let's talk real quickly and shift the topic to the potential override of Governor Fallon's veto of Senate Bill 1522. Are you getting any feel up there, or what's your position on this particular piece of legislation?
Yeah, well, we're going to have a rally this afternoon at 4:30 at the Capitol, as you know, and we're going to try to wake up sleeping, slumbering church and conservatives. But among my colleagues, there is definitely a will and a desire to override this veto. The problem is, Mark, when the lights come on and the board lights up and they actually have to put their vote where their mouths are, you just watch them run. They're like roaches. They climb under their desks and reach up from underneath and press no and then slide back under. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. These people go out and campaign as pro-life. Our governor has just constantly claimed to be pro-life.
Yep.
And then what she does is she says, well, this law is not constitutional. Well, just for a moment, let's say that maybe it's not. Well, when was it the governor's job to determine what the courts are supposed to do? She's supposed to simply execute the law. Yep. Let it go to the court system. If they overturn it, then that'll just give us more reason to fix the courts. But so anyway, I don't mean to get off preaching. I apologize. But,
no.
I love it. So anyway, I think there's a good chance that we will override the veto. The problem is, Mark, I'm learning from like yesterday, you can't even count on the so-called conservatives to do what they say they're going to do. So it's just a roll of the dice. It's anybody's guess as to what they'll do when the lights come on.
No, you're right, Representative Fisher. You are spot on right. We don't know. There's going to be a big effort, I know that, to do this. And by the way, I want to thank you for your leadership on that issue. You and I worked closely together in developing this whole idea of using our state statutes to end this issue of abortion here, only in the state of Oklahoma. And let's be clear, you're not trying to end abortion in Maine or Vermont.
No,
you're just focused on Oklahoma, right?
Yeah, it's state sovereignty. It's what we've had all along, and we won't exercise.
Yeah.
And you know that this George Tiller-esque clinic, abortion clinic, is coming into Oklahoma, and they've been watching what we're doing on this bill, 1552. And if we uphold it, they're thinking about not coming in. But if we don't, we're going to get a brand new clinic for the first time in 40 years. And our relatively low rate of abortion is going to begin to climb.
Yeah.
I don't understand why people don't get that.
Boy, Dan, how sick.
If anybody's listening to your program in Oklahoma, please you know, wake up for just a few moments and let's do what we say we believe.
Yeah. How sick is it, Dan, that an abortion clinic has studied the market of Oklahoma and come to realize they can make money by opening up a clinic here to kill babies? How sick is that?
Well, that's as low as it goes, Mark. Yeah. And I'm just telling you, I don't know why God hasn't cremated us already.
Yeah, I know.
To be honest with you. But we seem to have some opportunity left to do the right thing. You know, it's kind of like the story in Scripture about Sodom and Gomorrah. Here's Lot and his family. The Bible later in the New Testament says Lot was a believer. Mm-hmm. But somehow they became so desensitized to what was going on around them. Of course, he sat at the city gate, which was a position of prominence. And I guess he didn't want to give that up. And so he just sat there while all of that debauchery was going on around him until finally God yanks him out of there by his collar right before he drops fire and brimstone.
Yes.
And I think that's a perfect picture of we conservatives and those of us who are Christians on top of that. We just seem to have decided we can live with it.
Yeah,
and we're going to be held accountable.
Yep.
And our
yep.
families are going to be affected like his were.
That's right. That's right. Well, Representative Fisher, thank you so much for joining the program here today. I got to have you on for an hour because, you know, you've got some really good views on this issue. And so maybe in the near future here, we'll have you back on for a longer period of time. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, thank you, Mark. I appreciate it, buddy.
That was Representative Dan Fisher, House District 60 here in Oklahoma, the supposed most conservative state in the union, as he described in detail how his effort to deal with the Obama edict failed, not because the Democrats overwhelmed it, but because the GOP refused to stand by what they claim they believe. So, folks, I want to remind everybody and draw your attention to a promotion through Friday. We're going to have a special Memorial Day airing of Times That Try Men's Souls at 6 a.m., noon, and 6 p.m. And I want you to remember to tune in to this program. It's Times That Try Men's Soul. Let's bring on my good friend, Mike Church. He'll be following me on the Mike Church Show. Mike, can you go into a little bit more detail about this airing of this Times That Try Men's Soul special Memorial Day program? Mike, you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, this originally aired on Christmas Eve in 2013 on the old station in the old country. And it aired one more time on Christmas 2014. Obviously, I wasn't there 2015 to run it, but we did run it here.
Right.
And it's just the actual story of the events that led to the crossing of the Delaware River on Christmas Day, 1776.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't know the backstory behind all that. That Washington's army was basically almost disbanded. He was almost beaten. He was almost captured three times on his retreat across New Jersey. And it's just the story. You have to listen to it and just think with disbelief, how in the world did he actually avoid imminent defeat?
I know.
I mean, he was outnumbered. Not only was he outnumbered by Redcoats and Hessians, he also had to contend with Horatio Gates,
yep.
who was a traitor,
yep.
basically, and, and Lee, General yep. Charles Lee. I mean, Gates basically turned his back on Washington. Lee actually was a traitor. Lee actually disobeyed him and ran his army around in circles in New Jersey. That was 6,000 men that Washington could have used. And the fact that they come out on the other side and that they're not defeated and that the army remains intact is just... I'm not going to say it's miraculous, and you know why, because I don't want Beck to think it's miraculous, because it's not. And I don't want any Olive Gardenians going, Mike Church said it is miraculous. No, it's not miraculous. Even though it may have been, because I don't know who maybe have been praying for what besides Washington there, but
sure.
It most certainly is a magnificent story. So we're going to air it three times on Monday.
Yep.
And I am preparing a original broadcast that people have not heard before. That we're taping in parts, and that will also appear in between the pieces there. So we've got new programming coming for the Memorial Day celebration. So if you're out there and you're at the pool and you want to listen to something that's not softcore porn and is actual accurate history, it may elevate your spirits and tune in the Crusade Channel. If not, be gone with you. Go hang out in a girl's bathroom.
Can you believe it? Did you hear Representative?
I did.
Can you believe that? The GOP collapsed.
Is there a story on that? Because I want to talk about that in my opening monologue. I hadn't seen that.
Yeah, well, he called. It happened late last night. I don't know if there's any reporting on it yet. I'll check between break here, and if I can find something, I'll let you know. But he called me last night just demoralized. It's like,
I can hear it in his voice. Hey, by the way, so an announcement. Beginning of next Tuesday, you'll be on your new clock, and you won't have to go to breaks if you don't want to.
Oh, fantastic. All right.
You could skate right through those 40-minute wheels.
So I get to blow through something
as
finally.
As long as you're done at 8 a.m. sharp, I don't care.
We will be. So thank you for that great privilege. Real quick, what's up on your show coming out of the gate? You got 30 seconds.
Well, I'm going to talk about what just happened in Oklahoma. And as a twist, I'm just going to talk about what life would be like if we were all to detach ourselves from social media.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, I'll be listening. Thanks, friend. That was Mike Church. Following my show here at 8 a.m. Don't miss it. He's got great commentary on these issues, and I would say at times, wisdom from above. So thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Have a good day.